This episode is brought to you by Entrust Data Card, now offering a webinar series on creating more secure online interactions with your citizens while broadening the range of services that you can offer using strong identity authentication and digital signing technologies. Learn more at entrustdatacard.com. Welcome to AnvaCast, bringing news, information, and expertise to the Anva community. Here's your host, Ian Grossman. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the AnvaCast. I'm excited to welcome to today's episode Karen Grimm, who is one of this year's recipients of our Award for Lifetime Achievement in Highway Safety. Particularly, Karen is our recipient this year in the Motor Vehicle Administration category, and Karen has recently retired after a 44-year career at the Virginia Department of Motor Vehicles. And so as one of our recipients of this year's award, we're going to talk to Karen and get some information about that journey that led to this lifetime achievement recognition. Karen, welcome to the AnvaCast.
Thanks, Ian. I'm glad to be here to participate.
So, Karen, you finished a remarkable career recently. I guess before we talk about the journey that got here, how's retirement feeling? How does that fit on someone who has been so busy for so long?
Actually, retirement is a wonderful thing. It would have been better had we not had this pandemic. I could have a whole lot more fun than what I'm having, but I'm enjoying the time off.
That's great. What are you doing with all your free time where now you're retired and perhaps you had plans of traveling and going places and now you're not? What's filled up that time?
Well, I have a condo in Ocean City, Maryland, so I've been going and spending some time there. I also have been doing a lot of house projects. I'm getting ready to refinish floors and I put a new roof on and I've done some painting and all kinds of things around the house. So I'm finding things to keep me busy.
So you, even in those few sentences, you have reminded me something that I've said before, and I believe it's true. Retirement people are the busiest people I know. they fill that time. I guess the difference is you get to fill it with all the things you want to do, and you're not required to stay on someone else's schedule.
You do, and you get to take a lot of breaks.
Great. Well, let's talk about this extraordinary career, Karen. When we presented you this award, which unfortunately we had to do this year via video as opposed to gathering together at our annual conference as we often do, the first line of presenting it to you really struck me, which is that your career with the DMV began almost immediately after high school. You went straight from your schooling and childhood to the world of the DMV. How does that transition happen right away, so early, so young? How did that fall onto your plate?
Well, when I graduated from high school, it was a really big deal with my parents. My mother did not make it past the 10th grade, and my father quit high school to join the Navy to be in World War II. He did end up getting his, he got a GED. So both of my parents were so thrilled that I was actually graduating from high school, since they didn't have that opportunity, that they didn't know anything about college and didn't talk to me any about college. And so then they said, you know, you got to go out and you get a job. And my father worked for the state forever, and it seemed like the thing to do. So I went and I applied for a DMV job, and lo and behold, I became an entry-level data entry operator back in 1973. So actually, it's been 46 years. But,
so you were a Virginia native. You grew up in Virginia in the Richmond area, or a different part of the state?
I've been in Richmond my entire life.
And what part of the state did your dad work for at that point?
He worked for the Virginia State Police in the Richmond area.
So this idea of highway safety was already something in your vernacular, in your world, with him being exposed to that side of the community.
Absolutely, since the beginning of time. And my parents used to laugh and tease me about an incident. I think I was 3 years old, and my father was chosen to do some highway safety commercials around holidays. And so they decided that they wanted to include a child in these commercials with a couple, and they would always have him sitting in the back seat of the car, and then I was supposed to sit in the front seat with this other couple. And they had to rewrite one of the commercials because I refused to sit in the front seat with the other couple, and I kept hopping the seat into the back seat, and finally they had to make the commercial and say that I knew where the safe place was with the police officer.
So it was hardwired into you.
It was. And honestly, throughout my entire childhood, teenage years, and even as an adult, I heard an awful lot about highway safety from my dad.
So it's 1973. You're an entry-level data entry operator. What does that mean to be a data entry operator in 1973? Obviously, some would say, you know, it was very different technology. Others might say, with those that have followed the story of modernization in the DMV world, you know, those systems weren't that different than what is currently being left behind as folks go through modernization. So can you tell us a little more about what those systems were like that you were working on in 1973?
Oh, gosh, so very different. There was no such thing as anything online. Everything was what we refer to as key punched into the machine, and we would process, like I was processing accident reports. I would type all the information from a coded accident report, and then I would batch up my work and swap it with the person sitting next to me, and we would have to double entry all the work. And you'd find out if there was an error, if the work didn't match, and you would correct the work. So that's, think now, if every bit of work you had to do was double entered, you'd have twice as many employees as you have today. And all of the work, all of the notices that went out to the individuals were all hand typed at a typewriter. There were rooms with people just sitting there in typewriters typing away. If somebody came into an office and they needed information, it was in a paper file, and somebody had to go get that paper file and take it down for somebody to read. So the difference between then and now is just night and day.
And so how does going from data entry operator, where do you first start to realize, okay, there are other jobs here at the DMV I can go and do, or somebody notices you and says, yeah, here's an opportunity to maybe move beyond that entry-level position to other positions that have a different path in the agency. When does that start to happen?
Probably the biggest move I made was going from a data entry operator to I became what was referred to back in the day as a secretary. I went to secretarial school and learned all about how to structure letters and things of that nature and take shorthand. And I applied for a job as secretary in our public relations office. And the lady in that office kind of took me under her wing. She was the director of public relations at the time. And she saw that I had some capabilities more than that of being a secretary. And she would give me additional duties and things of that nature so that I could do more than secretarial work, so that when I applied for another job, I could show that I had those skills and abilities. So I did that for a few years, and she encouraged me to go to school. So I then went to community college and took courses there and decided, well, I'm not going to be a secretary for the rest of forever, so I need to move into some clerical and management positions. And it was very difficult to get a promotion into a supervisory position when I'd never even worked in a work center per se, other than data entry. So I ended up having to make a lateral transfer into a work center. But one thing I did realize as I was going through my career, you have to look out for yourself and make a lot of lateral transfers. At least you did back then. I mean, and you had to be able to prove yourself. And that's what I did. I made a lot of transfers. I transferred in the same job positions. I would transfer from a driver position to a vehicle position. So even though I was in the same job position per se. I was expanding my knowledge throughout the agency. And that's what I did. So I'd make a couple of lateral transfers. I'd apply for a couple of promotions, and it all seemed to fall in place.
And it all was within the DMV the whole time. Did you ever consider making those lateral moves within state government, but outside of the DMV? Sometimes the old adage, you have to leave to come back. You didn't have to do that. You were able to grow within the structure of the DMV, which isn't always true for everybody.
That's true. I stayed within DMV. I did look outside one time when I wasn't real happy with the way things were going, and I almost got the job, and word got back to DMV that I was in the running for a position somewhere else. And then things changed to the positive for me at DMV.
They said, we've got to keep Karen. Let's switch this thing around. That makes perfect sense. So along the way, one of the roles that you had really got you deeply involved with the interaction with the judicial system in Virginia.
Yes.
And I know that one of the things that talk a lot in your story is being involved in that original design and development of the interface between the courts and the DMV. When does that occur in your career journey?
Oh gosh, that probably took place about 10 or 12 years into my career. I had transferred into a kind of a higher level supervisory position, and I became responsible for all of the folks that went to court to testify on driving suspended cases. And I became very, very familiar with the courts in the around the state, and I started to learn more about, you know, what their needs were in association with what our needs were. And so I then started working closely with the courts in order to have an interface to exchange conviction data.
And so that's in the 10 years in, so you're now in the mid 80s. And so the technology there that you're using to do that, you know, there's no online, there's no email. So what's that interface look like? Is it really just a matter of organizing mail? And I mean, what's the technology being used in that interface now in the mid 80s?
It was a tape exchange.
Okay.
So the courts would enter their data on tapes, and then they would send it to DMV.
Got it. And so how is that, having been there from the stand up of that in the 80s, I assume over the years you've watched and been involved with the modernization of that similar process using more current technology?
Somewhat. Unfortunately, the courts are pretty restricted on the resources they have to make enhancements to their system. And so that it's been a slow process. Yes, the information is still processed and sent over to DMV. It's sent over electronically now versus sending a tape, but it's been a slow process. There are times where we've, you know, looked at, boy, we should like to be able to send amended abstracts of conviction and some things, and being the courts being able to delete information, but it's still unfortunately more of a basic process. It gets the job done, and honestly, it's still ahead of where a lot of other states are, because a lot of other states still exchange paper from the courts to the DMV. So
right. So the fact that it's not paper and mail means you're already a step ahead of what it otherwise would be.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we've spoken with a lot of other states and given them a lot of good information on how to build their system.
Well, I imagine one of those challenges there is in dealing with the judicial system. You're talking about so many individual courts, so many levels of courts and court clerks, the diversity, the variety, the differences in the resources that those different courts must have available to them is just going to vary all over the board.
It does. And dealing with the lower level courts is easier than the higher level courts. The lower level courts pretty much all report to the executive secretary at the Virginia Supreme Court, where the circuit court clerks are kind of their own entities and they do their own thing. So we worked around it and we got there, but it wasn't as easy.
Yeah. So your career continues. There's a long list of those different titles, as you mentioned, the constant lateral moves, moves from different offices. And then it seems, as I look at it, you get to this big jump a little bit further down the line after being a division manager, a director, and then all of a sudden you've got the word commissioner in your title. Assistant commissioner, senior assistant commissioner, and then eventually deputy commissioner. That seems to me, you know, looking from as an outsider, that's the another big leap from even management to kind of the executive leadership role.
It is. I will say that.
Yeah. So when does that first happen, that you kind of make that transition from whether it is a, you know, the directing a unit, directing a team, and now all of a sudden there's this opportunity to be part of the executive leadership of the agency? Do you remember what year this transition occurs?
Oh, gosh. Honestly, that was probably maybe 10 years ago. I wasn't in the executive level positions. I don't think that long ago in the grand scheme of things, not when you're looking at 46 years, but it really helped that I had been able to manage in a variety of different areas.
Along that journey, then somewhere in the line, you start to get more involved in the conversations around driver license compacts. And at the time, the conversation around the driver's license agreement. In fact, you know, we've all been in many meetings where, you know, with great affection, you've been dubbed the mother of what was the driver's license agreement and served multiple times on the compact board, including as the chair of the board. Talk to us about that experience of being involved in that particular line of work that really you were such a critical player in conversations across jurisdiction lines.
Well, that started so long ago because we probably did, God, almost 8 years worth of work before it came to an end when the Real ID started up. So it was long ago. And I remember going to meetings on the driver license compact because I was responsible for driver licensing in Virginia at the time. And so I was Virginia's representative and I went to a number of the meetings, and I'm not one to just sit back and be one of the pack. I like to get involved and have a lot to say about things. And so I just kind of rose to a leadership position with that, just based on that I wanted to be an active participant in it. And I felt like the things that I had to say and my knowledge brought some value to the whole process. So I just got involved from there and just kind of stuck with it up until the time, like I said, Real ID came along, and unfortunately it came to an end there.
Though I think the specific effort on the driver's license agreement sort of came to an end, but so many of the tenets of that work have flowed into conversations that are still going on around state to state and the compacts. And it still all goes back to that, you know, fundamental idea of, you know, one driver, one license, one record, all for the purpose of having safer drivers and safer roads. So that work is still being tapped into.
Absolutely. I don't think the work was for naught. That's for sure. It was a lot of work that was put into it by a lot of individuals from around the country. And I think a lot of it we're going to see move forward through state to state in particular.
So you've been in those conversations really right up to your last day with Virginia, and I happen to know even post your last day in Virginia, you've been so kind to, you know, give some guidance and advice to those of us who have needed it as we continue to work on the topic. As you look back from those conversations of when you first got involved to driver's license compacts, NDLA, and what we see now with state to state. Would you have expected it to have been where we are? And what, when you look forward, where would you want to see it going, knowing everything you've known and the conversations you've been a part for so many years?
I'm excited about it now. For a long time, it seemed like it was not a topic of conversation. The compacts mm-hmm. were not. With state to state, oh my, I see the driver's license compact all over that. And it's not just the compact, it's enhancing it where in the electronic format. And that's where we kind of had the vision back in the day when we were talking about it, but it just wasn't time. And now the time has finally come.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is an exciting time. And I don't think we would not be where we are if not for those conversations that you were a part of for so many years, that continual evolution of making it better, modernizing it, and even that conversation with the driver's license agreement. You're right, Real ID certainly changed the path, but we wouldn't be where we are without having gone through that process that you helped lead.
Exactly. So the legwork is done.
That's great. So then, you know, we started talking a little bit earlier about moving into the executive management leadership mm-hmm. role of the agency. How did that, from a career perspective, you know, how does that compare with you were able to be deep into driver licensing or deep into vehicle work, and now all of a sudden, you know, you've got to be jack of all trades, expert of none, you know, leading an agency. How did that shift impact your career and the type of work you were doing?
It helps when you know a little bit about everything. You don't need to know it all, but it does help mm-hmm. to know a little bit about it. I had some great staff that worked for me. I have to say, I have been very, very fortunate through the years to have great folks working with me and for me. And if I hadn't had those folks, I would not have been a success. So it's not just me. It was those folks, but I worked very closely with them. I can't say mm-hmm. although I'm a hands-on manager, I'm not a micromanager. And I think that leads to your folks being able to be more expressive and be of more value in their jobs as well, when you give them the latitude to do it themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. So talking about giving latitude, you must have received that to have been able to make all these changes over the years. You mentioned early on the one individual kind of put their arm around you and said, "Hey, come learn this skill and go back to school," and set you on that path. How about other mentors that have helped you along the way, and how they impacted, you know, your career with the Virginia DMV? Were there folks that, as you look back, kind of stick out to you, and you could say, "Oh, they, you know, they helped me point here or point there"?
There are a couple of them. The first one I was referring to was Ann Ober, and she was in public relations, and she was one of the few females that was in management, and so she kind of coached me from that perspective. And then when I started going into supervisory and management positions, I worked over in what was referred to as driver improvement, and that was reporting to the manager of everything that has to do with driver services. And that was Clarence Bradbury, and he kind of took me under his wing. And I tell you, he taught me how to read a code book. I didn't have a clue anything about the law and how to read it and how to apply it when I first started going into supervisory and management positions. And he spent an inordinate amount of time with me going through and showing me how, you know, just because you read this one law doesn't mean that's it. You have to read something in another section, and you have to see which code section overrides the other based on what conditions and those sorts of things. So honestly, he helped me tremendously in understanding the laws. And it's funny because Rick Holcomb, the DMV commissioner, always said that I was a lawyer wannabe. And I think we can blame Clarence Bradbury on that because he really drilled into my head how you read the law and how you apply it. And that was extremely helpful to me. And up until the day I left, and in fact, some people still call me today. Now, what did the law say about this, that, or the other? So I knew it pretty well.
That's fantastic.
So that was very helpful. And then I always tell the story, and I won't give his name. He was the worst manager I have ever had. And
sometimes you learn as much from that as the good ones.
And that's exactly where I was going. I learned so many things not to do based on his style of management. So as crazy as it is, I guess he was a mentor in a strange sort of way.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I think many of us have those stories that you learn as much from watching. Okay. I want to make sure I don't do that.
Absolutely. And then I can't let go without giving kudos to Rick because he had so much confidence in me and faith in me to let me do my job. I knew how to do the job, but I also knew what I had to take forward to him as well. So we worked together very, very well. And I was one of the few people that I'd say, nah, Rick, I don't think that's the way to do it. I knew he had the final word. And a lot of times he'd say, I hear what you're saying and we're going to do it my way. But a lot of times he'd come back and say, you know what you're talking about. So he gave me a lot of confidence to do my job. I have to say that.
And the key there is that relationship that you feel free enough to tell him you disagree.
Absolutely.
And he can listen and he'll make that decision. And whether he takes it or not, what matters is that he has in you a trusted advisor who's going to give him their honest opinion that he needs to inform his decision.
Absolutely. How important that is, because so many people are, for whatever reason, afraid of some executives, any executive. It's like, oh, you have this title and you have to say yes. And that's not what your job is, to say yes. Your job is to educate people. Not everybody knows everything about everything. So you got to tell them.
And it's like you were saying, when you were successful, it's because of the team you had around you. And that's true for anybody in any position.
Absolutely. Nobody can do it by themselves.
So Karen, the last piece I really want to ask you about is your involvement with AMVA over the years, more directly being involved with the association. Was it through the compact work that you first got connected with AMVA, or had you had previous exposure to the association?
I had a little bit of exposure, not a whole lot. I had gone into a started in middle management positions, and Ann Ober, the lady I was talking about, was still at DMV, and she was involved in AMVA, and she asked if she could bring me to one of the conferences with her. I think it was out in Colorado, and I didn't even know what AMVA stood for back in those days, but she saw something in me and thought it would be a good idea to take me, and so she took me to this first. It wasn't a regional meeting. It was an AMVA meeting on something, and I don't even remember what it was. But she took me to it, and I just became interested from there. And every time something would come up, I'd say, well, I'll volunteer to do it. I'll do it. So, like I said, I became involved from the driver's license compact side. And from there, I decided I wanted to become involved from the regional perspective, and at the time I became involved in the regions, you had to be an agency head for the most part to become even a president of one of the regions. And I remember I was on a break and I was talking to Martha Irwin, who was involved heavily in Region 2, and I said, well, how do I get involved in it? I said, I'm not an agency head or an executive, but I'd like to become involved. And she said, well, gosh, we never really thought about bringing people in lower positions. She said, but it's a good idea. Let me talk to some folks. Well, she talked to some folks, and the next thing I was in the, I think it was a secretary position of Region 2 and went up through the position to Region 2 president. So again, it was because I volunteered.
Sure. Sometimes it's just a matter of showing up and saying, I'm willing to do the work. Yeah. And someone says, okay, well, let's get you involved. And that Martha was aware enough and open enough to say, hey, maybe we can do this a little
bit
differently.
She was. I miss seeing Martha. I haven't seen her in a number of years. It would be good to see her.
Well, Karen, I appreciate you spending some time with us today and to talk a little bit about the journey you've been on that's, you know, in so many ways have saved so many lives, not only in Virginia, but on our roads in so many places. And the work of the DMV sometimes in the administration and the operations, it's so important to remember that it's all driving towards that safety mission. And so few people can embody it quite as well as you have and carry that flag. So thank you for doing that. And congratulations on being our recipient for Lifetime Achievement in Highway Safety for Motor Vehicle Administration.
Well, thank you. And thanks to all the folks at AMBA, because AMBA gave me a chance too. So I appreciate that.
More importantly, enjoy your retirement. Don't be a stranger. Let us know how you're doing. And hopefully we'll be having conferences again in the not so dear future. And even at that next Region 2 conference, we'll be able to see you up there on that past president's table at breakfast and give you the congratulatory hug you so well deserve.
I hope so, because it's supposed to be in Virginia.
The next one is, that's right, 2021 in Norfolk. So hopefully
Absolutely.
We can do it there.
I hope so. I'll be there with bells on, that's for sure.
Well, thanks again, Karen. Thank you all for listening to the AmvaCast. Thanks to our producer, Claire Jeffrey, and we'll see you next time. Stay well.
Thank you for joining us for AmvaCast, hosted by Ian Grossman, produced by Claire Jeffrey, music by Gibson Arthur. This episode has been brought to you by Entrust Data Card. Visit us at amvacast.podbean.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify.